Frontier Town, the saga of the Roaring West.
I'm Nahla Ayed, and this is Ideas.
Here is the adventurous story of the early West, the tamed and the untamed. From the Pecos to Powder River, Dodge City to Poker Flat, these are the towns they fought to live in and lived to fight for. Teeming crucibles of pioneer freedom. Frontier Town!
The cowboy and the cattle drive are potent images in American culture. They help make up the myth of the West. Pioneer freedom and frontier towns. Cattle drives. Wagon trains. It's the West of the imagination, but it's much more than that.
More poems, more plays, early film, memoirs, frontier stories, dime novels.
The cowboy, the lawman, the iconoclastic Westerner making his way.
You add it up and it's a massive cultural infrastructure. It convinces everybody that there is this thing called the frontier and that it does matter and that it's important.
What fascinating stories there were in the life of the stagecoach. In the lives of its courageous passengers who found romance in danger and understanding in strange companionship.
The myth of the American West for me conjures that scene in Stagecoach.
Brother, you mean the Apaches? There's been no sign of them.
You don't see any signs of them. They strike like rattlesnakes.
For me, you know, I often sit with the reality that Americans have killed us, Native people, an awful lot in real life and in their imagination.
What helps keep the Western myth alive is pop culture.
From out of the West comes Red Ryder, America's famous fighting cowboy.
The movies of John Ford and John Wayne.
What is it now, Pilgrim? Your conscience?
But in America, of course, it's more than the movies. The myth of the West feeds a political ideology, an argument for more conquest, more progress, always at the expense of those who get in the way. Arguably, the cowboy hat is now swapped for the red Make America Great hat.
Well, I think it's about time. The way the corn's been growing for the last two or three generations.
Look at that herd of buffalo. They're ready.
Everything's living the Great Spirit's way, in harmony.
He'll be here soon.
The true white brother's coming home. Remember what the Great Spirit said? If we did what we were supposed to do and lived according to the plan, white brother would finish his work in the East and come back to us. It'll be nice to have the family together again.
Hello,
you must be the true white brother.
Sure, you must be the Indian.
Yes.
Welcome home.
Welcome to New Spain. This is your new father, Father Corona.
Down on your knees now. Do you recognize what I'm holding over your heads, lads?
It's a cross, the symbol of the quartering of the universe into active and passive principles.
God have mercy on their heathen souls.
What the father means is, what is the cross made of? Gold. Have you got any?
No.
What about the seven cities of gold? Phoenix, Tucson, Las Vegas?
This is gold.
What's that?
Corn.
Hey, corn! Now we can make tortillas!
We've been waiting for this for hundreds of years.
I just invented tacos!
So this is all you got?
Yes, but... aren't you the true white brother who's supposed to come and live with us in peace?
Sure. Therefore, I claim this rich verdant of pasture land in the name of the Empire of Spain.
Hey, Capitano, the rain, she's a stopper to fall, and the corn, she's all dead.
Shut up, Vespucci. I claim this stinking desert in the name of the Empire of Spain forever. Let's go.
God bless Vespucci land.
Oh, by the way, Domini, you're all Catholics now. God bless you.
Come on, and Father. Nobody in their right mind would live in this stinking desert.
Come on, Cisco.
Boy, I'm tired of pushing west. How long ago we leave Goshen?
About 2 hours ago. Ain't we ever gonna stop?
Quiet down, old boys. Wagon boss.
My fellow settlers.
Hold it down.
I stand here tonight, facing west, on what was once the last frontier. From the lands that stretch 3,000 miles behind us, the pioneers gave up their safety, their comfort, and sometimes their lives, to build our new West. They were determined to make the new world strong and free, an example to the world, to overcome its hazards and its hardships.
We stand here at the edge of civilization, on the banks of the Mississippi River, looking west at our destiny. What may appear to the faint-hearted as a limitless expanse of God-forsaken wilderness
is
in reality a golden opportunity for humble, God-fearing people like ourselves and our families and our children and the generations a coming to carve a new life out of the American Indian.
Welcome, white brother.
Engines! Call the wagons up into our circle!
Why do you always do that?
We get better reception that way. Do you mind if I put this antenna up on yonder peak?
That's our sacred mountain.
This is our sacred antenna. It's shaped like a cross, made out of aluminum. Got any aluminum?
We've still got some corn left.
Hey, corn, now we can make whiskey.
We've been waiting hundreds of years for this.
Invented Tom Collins.
Here, Injun, you want some fire water?
No, we were warned by our elders not to drink anything that would make us weak or silly.
Put it in their well.
That's not a well. It's the eye of the Holy Serpent Mound on which you're standing.
It's a butte.
No, it's a mound.
And right purty, too. Can you move it?
But why?
Railroad's coming through. Right now.
Hey, what we stopping for?
We in Goshen yet?
Can't go no further. This here's Injun territory.
Well then, it's treaty time!
My fellow Redskins, speaking for the great white father in Washington and all the American people, let me say we respect you, savages, for your native ability to instantly adapt and survive in whatever godforsaken wilderness we move you to. Out there. Sign here.
They did it!
No reason to complain. It's not so bad out there. We still have our people and our ceremonies and the sun, moon, and stars and the sand and the black stuff coming out of the ground.
Black stuff coming out of the ground?
Civilization! Oh!
It's nice out here in the desert. No rain, no crops, no white brother.
All out for Fort Stinkin' Desert. Last Indian reservation for 2,000 miles. You got 15 minutes, folks. Get them while you can.
Get the senator back in the bus.
Godfrey Daniel, pesky Redskins. Which way's Goshen?
Howdy there, colorful replica of America's past. When is the exciting in its primitive splendor snake dance going to take place?
It's usually in August, but with all our children off in Indian school, there's no one left to do the ceremonies.
Hiya, Pop.
I'm home.
Hello, Soaring Eagle. It's good to have you back from school.
Oh, come on. Call me Eddie. I'm an American now.
What have they been teaching you?
Just what we need for a better life. French horn, Italian... water polo? Yes, at the Custer Memorial Indian School, Eddie's one of our prize students. We're giving him away next week.
Oh, my white brother.
Hey, man. Don't let him bring you down now. There's a lot of young people in this country just like myself who really know where the Indian's at. And don't worry, soon we're all going to be out here on the reservation, living like Indians and dressing like Indians and doing all the simple, beautiful things that you Indians do. You got any peyote?
Hey, how much is that necklace you're wearing?
Do you know how to do the war dance?
Hold it. Smile.
Isn't it amazing how they survive on this stinking desert?
You got any scalps?
Hey, let me get a shot of you and your squaw.
Hey, let's see the war dance.
Let's see the dance.
Let's see the dance.
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 Dance. Dance. Dance. Dance. Dance.
Okay, folks.
folks, fun's over. Back in the bus.
Where's little Billy Joe?
He's in that run-down outhouse over there, Mama.
That's our sun altar.
Well, Indian, just goes to show you there's an obvious need to conserve our priceless national heritage. The government is turning your home into a national monument.
It behooves me upon this historic occasion to dedicate the Stinking Desert National Historical Indian Monument and Cobalt Testing Range.
Civilization! Who?
Well, it's about time. There's been no corn growing for the last few generations. The buffalo's gone. There's no one left to live in harmony.
I wonder where we went wrong.
Let's just keep to the life plan. Remember what the Great Spirit said. Follow the peaceful way. The true white brother is bound to come.
All right, Indians, get ready.
Winning of the West, the massacre, take four.
Well, let's go.
My name is Jennifer McMahon. I'm a professor of philosophy and English at East Central University in Ada, Oklahoma. We are in central to south central Oklahoma, about an hour south of Oklahoma City, 2 hours from Tulsa, right off the I-35 corridor. It's called the Cross Timbers region in Oklahoma. It's where the hardwood forest meets the plains.
Jennifer McMahon is talking to me from her ranch. She has 100 head of beef cattle. And that's what you're hearing now.
I'm sitting here right now looking at our ranch out the window. I can see a mile. In this part of the country, cowboy culture is alive and well. You see cowboys on a regular basis driving down the road with their stock trailer and their quarter horse tacked up in the back. I see, you know, for years now, bringing our children to school every morning in front of me in the line, dropping off the kids, is a father dropping his kids off. But he's got his horse in the back of the stock trailer. He's got his chaps on and his spurs on and his hat. And he's going to work cattle somewhere. But it's a visible presence here in Oklahoma.
My name is William Deverell. I'm a professor of history at the University of Southern California. What is the myth of the American West? The roots of it, and maybe one of the central themes within it, have to do with notions of independence, personal freedom, self-reliance. There's a certain level of courage built into this myth. So it has to do with conquering nature and conquering the peoples that are encountered in the American West. And so the myth is, on the one hand, triumphant, on the other hand, deeply disturbing because of the damage the myth has provoked on the landscape and in the hearts, minds, and lives of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people.
Porcupines at the university. And now the purple dusk of twilight time steals across the meadows of my heart, the dean said. His pretty wife Paula extended her long, graceful hands full of Negronis. A scout burst into the room through the door.
Porcupines, he shouted.
Porcupines what? The dean asked.
Thousands and thousands of them, 3 miles down the road and coming fast.
Maybe they won't enroll, the dean said. Maybe they're just passing through. You can't be sure, his wife said. How do they look? He asked the scout, who was pulling porcupine quills out of his ankles.
Well, you know, like porcupines.
Are you going to bust them? Pamela asked. I'm tired of busting people, the dean said. They're not people, Paula pointed out.
De bustibus non est disputatandum, the scout said.
I suppose I'll have to do something, the dean said.
We wanted to imbue the script with the wisdom of Hesse's Siddhartha, crafting the tale of a man on a spiritual quest in the midst of the violence of the Old West. And when you think about it, that's what most Westerns are about, the attempt to bring moral and legal order to a place where lawlessness and violence rule the day. George saw the movie through a surrealistic prism, not a psychedelic one. So instead of there being legitimate Western sets, George constructed fantastical sets where Dick Van Patten, cast as Ralph Spoilsport, sold used horses instead of cars. The shoot was troubled from the start.
All right, friends, now the only thing that I ask is that you please step in a little closer. It's against the city ordinance for me to block a main thoroughfare, so give me a break, folks. Give yourselves a break. I promise you, you won't regret it. All right, friends, gather around now, and let's take a look at the greatest selection the world's largest Mustang dealer west of the giant Mississippi. Let's talk about horsepower. Or are you looking for a wagon? Conestogas, Studebakers, Surreys, wagons of any descriptions. We are covered where wagons are concerned. Now let's take a look at this beauty. An 1889 Overland, complete with wood spoke wheels, water barrels, and a brand new canvas top. Or take a glance at these beautiful little fillies. They're slick, they're sleek, they're ready to go. And what's more, friends, they're guaranteed for the rest of your human life. Or a new set of shoes, whichever comes first. Now, friends, this is no humbug. Now, there's a man that looks like he knows a lot about horses. Come here, sir. Come on over here, Wrangler. Come here, boy. I tell you what I want you to do, boy. I want you to look at the inside of this filly's mouth. Come on. Don't be afraid. This is the way I operate, folks. It's all on the up and up. If you feel that I am misrepresenting in any shape or form each and every one of
smile,
you lovely
cowboy.
People...
I bet your teeth are prettier than his.
Well, but now it's time to get back to business. Now, I know you're all here to get a bargain, and that's what I aim to give you, but nobody gets nothing for nothing. I'd only be insulting your intelligence if I were to tell you that. That's why they call me the dude, because I'll get you in the mood, and I won't be rude. So step in a little closer, and at the end of the sale, everybody's going to get a free prize. That's right, free, absolutely free.
Hiya, friends. Ralph Spoilsport. Ralph Spoilsport Motors, the world's largest new used and used automobile dealership. Ralph Spoilsport Motors here in the city of Emphysema. Let's just look at the extras on this fabulous car. Wire wheel spoke fenders, two-way sneeze through wind vents, star sun mudguard, sponge-coated edible steering column, chrome fender dents, and factory air-conditioned air from our fully factory-equipped air-conditioned factory. It's a beautiful car, friends, with doors to match. Birch's Blacklist says this automobile was stolen, but for you, friends, a complete price, only $2,500. An easy monthly payment, once a week, twice a week, and never on Sunday.
Well, I'll take it. I can't wait to get away from it all.
Well, okay, fine. Let's just take a look inside your beautiful new home. Come on in.
Thanks.
As you can see, this car's been fully equipped with a complete line of extras designed with your mind in mind. Wow. Here, for instance, an all-weather climate control in red, blue, or green with a special oxygen danger indicator level.
Gee whiz.
And here, of course, your own personal remote control picture-sized color TV with matching brass knob. Just reach above the bar and press the button right there under the handy laminated imitation mason at Wild West Gun Rack with a look of real wood for the channel of your choice.
Woo! Got close that time. Look out for that bomb! It's all right, I got it.
Calling me out, Red? I'll handle this. Draw! Zach, I got him. I got him, Zach. I got him!
The Dean loaded a gleaming Gatling gun capable of delivering 360 rounds a minute. The Gatling gun sat in a mule-drawn wagon, and it was covered with an old piece of canvas. Formerly, it had sat on a concrete slab in front of the ROTC building. First, the Dean said to himself, all they see is this funky old wagon pulled up by this busted-up old mule. Then I whip off the canvas. There stands the gleaming Gatling gun, capable of delivering 360 rounds a minute. My hand resting lightly, confidently on the crank. They shall not pass, I say. Ils ne passeront pas. Then the porcupine hide begins to fly.
I wonder if these rounds are still good.
The gigantic Gatling gun loomed over the herd like an immense piece of bad news. Hey, Griswold!
What?
He's got a gun!
I see it, Griswold said. You think I'm blind?
What are we gonna do?
How about vamoosing? But the herd! Them little porcupines can take care of their own selves, Griswold said. God darn, I guess we better parley. He got up off the grass where he had been stretched full length and walked toward the wagon. What say, partner?
Look, the Dean said, you can't enroll these porcupines. It's out of the question.
That's so.
It's out of the question, the Dean repeated.
We've had a lot of trouble around here. The cops won't even speak to me. We can't take any more trouble.
The Dean glanced at the herd. It's a mighty handsome herd you have there.
Kind of you, Griswold said. It's a mighty handsome mule you got.
They both gazed at the Dean's terrible-looking mule.
Griswold wiped his neck with a red bandana. don't want no porcupines over to your place, is that it?
That's it.
Well, we don't go where we ain't wanted, the wrangler said. No call to throw down on us with that machine there.
The Dean looked embarrassed.
Thomas Flanagan, in the New York Review of Books, said the cattle drive is America's Iliad and Odyssey. If that's true, then the Western film is the poem by which the story is told.
This is my town and nobody's going to run me out of it. If the kid wants to shoot it out with me, I'll be here.
They frequently simplify our moral situation in an effort to provide a satisfying escape from the moral ambiguity that we confront on a daily basis.
I'm sure to get fired. Hey, cattle!
There's oftentimes, and this is characteristic of traditional Westerns, there is a fairly recognizable code. You have a villain, you have a protagonist hero, you have visual iconography that helps the viewer identify those figures. You know, the hero is typically wearing the white hat.
Somebody around here don't like it.
They saw you and the men ride off after the herd. They came to all the ranches that night, dragged off everything they could carry.
Riding across the great flat plains, with gun and torch, they pillaged the countryside.
The Western film is a frame for telling a near truth in a deliberate way. That's how myths work. Of course, there were real range cowboys and real wagon-trained settlers. The Lakota Sioux of the Great Plains know that all too well. And these people, they weren't out to lay the groundwork for modern political ideology. They were just trying to live their lives. The U.S. Library of Congress in the 1970s and the Mesa County Oral History Project in Colorado in the same decade recorded some of their stories and the songs they could remember. These are people looking back to the real Old West.
Harry, tell me about the famous night herding song.
Well, we always got night herd years ago and it didn't have so many fences and corrals. And that was the biggest job of the cowboy. We generally have a two-hour shift and 2 to 4 men on a shift according to the size of the herd. And when I made up this song, well, we always had so many different squalls and yells and hollers of trying to keep the cattle quiet, I thought we might as well have a kind of a song to it. Oh, slob donkeys, quench your roving around. You're wandered and tramped all over the ground. Oh, graze along, donkeys, and feed kinder.
Meanwhile, the porcupine wrangler was wrangling the porcupines across the dusty and overbuilt west. Dust clouds, yips, the lowing of porcupines. Get along there, little porcupines.
And when I reach the great porcupine canneries of the east, I will be rich, the wrangler reflected. I will sit on the front porch of the Muehlbach Hotel in New York City and smoke me a big cigar. Then the fancy women.
There are a lot better things to get close to in Camino than that horse, cowboy. What are you interested in?
I'm not sure yet.
Camino's a cabaret, cowboy. Enjoy yourself.
All right, you porcupines, step up to that yellow line. There was no yellow line. This was just an expression the wrangler used to keep the porcupines moving. He had heard it in the army. The damn fool porcupines didn't know the difference. The wrangler ambled along reading the ads in a copy of Song Hits magazine. Play harmonica in 5 mins, and so forth. The porcupines scuffled along, making their little hops. There were 4,000 or 5,000 in the herd. Nobody had counted exactly. An assistant wrangler rode in front of the outskirts of the herd. He, too, had a copy of Song Hits magazine in his hip pocket. He looked at the head wrangler's arm, which had a lot of little holes in it. Hey, Griswold?
Yeah?
How'd you get all them little holes in your arm?
You ever tried to slap a brand on a porcupine?
Probably the fancy women will be covered with low-cut dresses and cheap perfume, the wrangler thought.
What do you do?
I'm a gunfighter.
Billy the Kid, Wild Bill Hickok, Matt Dillon, Marshall McLuhan, I've had them all. Most gunfighters bore me.
I won't.
So here we are, the four sophisticated boulevardiers and Marshall McLuhan. We weren't quite sure what Marshall's reaction would be. So we went into the, none of us had ever been to a topless restaurant. Herb Cain had been to topless, Carol Doda was the girl with the first show business silicone breasts, had a striptease place nearby, but he had never been to the restaurant. So we walk into this restaurant, it's 12:30, the high noon time for lunch. The Off-Broadway was right in the Montgomery Streets section of San Francisco. That's where the Wall Street of San Francisco. And here, we suddenly found ourselves in a large restaurant in Stygian darkness, except for spotlights which were picking out the waitresses. All of the customers were men, mostly from Montgomery Street, who seemed to be huddled together in these dark clothes, sort of like men in the back corner of a pornography store or something. And the lights only picked out the waitresses, who were clad. Their complete clothing was what the French call a corsage. We would probably call a G-string or a mini-thong, and spiked high heels. That was their entire serving food. They were carrying these trays around, and always a spotlight. There must have been a dozen of them. A spotlight followed them wherever they went. So I looked to Cain, and then I looked to Gossage to try to see, how do you get a take on all of this. They were like I was. They were both speechless, absolutely speechless. We were all in a state of shock, except for one of us, Marshall McLuhan. Immediately, I heard Marshall say, "Well, this is very interesting. It's very interesting." And so I said, "What's interesting, Marshall?" He said, "They're wearing us." And I said, "What do you mean they're wearing us?" "They're putting us on." And I thought that was the greatest Joycean pun that I'd heard in a long time. They're putting us on.
And first I put my arms around him, yes, and drew her down to me so I could feel her breasts all perfumed, yes, and his heart was going like mad. And yes, I said, yes, I will, yes, yes, yes.
This is Major Hitt in the cockpit of the Enola McLuhan, flagship of the 7th Airborne Peace Corps and Lending Library.
Probably there'll be hundreds of them, hundreds and hundreds, all after my medicine bundle containing my gold and my lucky drill bit. But if they try to rush me, I will pull my guitar and sing them a song of prairie virility. Griswold, the wrangler, wrote a new song in the saddle. Fancy woman, how come you don't do right? I'd a rap you in the mouth for the way you acted in the porte cochere of the Trinity River Consolidated General High last Friday night. I will sit back and watch it climb in the charts, he said to himself, as recorded by Merle Travis. First it will be a bell ringer, then top 40, finally a golden oldie. All right, you porcupines, get along.
So Red River is kind of a capitalist fantasy.
We're going to Missouri with 10,000 head. Want you all to know what you're up against. We got 1,000 miles to go. 10 miles a day will be good. 15 will be luck. There'll be no quitting along the way, not by me and not by you.
Red River is a Howard Hawks picture. It tells the story of the cattle drive. John Wayne owns the cattle. He's driving them to market. Montgomery Clift is the younger right-hand man. On one hand, it's a story of a generational divide.
It's a rendering of the first cattle drives. So Red River makes John Wayne into our rancher. Who can be more heroic than John Wayne driving his cattle to market?
But there's this modern subtext, or modern for 1948, and it's about how John Wayne runs his cattle business as a tough guy boss with a lousy sense of modern labor relations.
What are you stopping him for?
This water here looks pretty good.
Well, there's water 3 or 4 miles on ahead.
The men are beat. They've had a pretty tough day. I think in all
I'll do the thinking. Keep them going.
Red River tells the story of this Ahab-like character maniacally driving his cattle to the railhead in Abilene. Increasingly, Wayne's style grates against the sensibilities of the people who work for him, and they find him increasingly oppressive. And Montgomery Clift intervenes in order to make him more humane. And it becomes a kind of parable of management styles.
You say about 15 miles away?
Oh, maybe a little more.
Yes, about a two-day drive. Well, who's going to stay behind and drive the herd? Nobody. I don't blame you. We're going together and taking the herd with us.
That's fair enough.
2 days, we'll all have a cup of coffee.
Why no?
Hey, you might tell the rest of the men. Maybe they'd like to hear.
So it's a workplace drama.
It's all about workplace. I mean, it has, you know, certain genre conventions that you need to have. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing is about enterprise and work.
So is the idea that John Wayne, the hero, the old style, driving his cowboys too hard, threatening them is not the way to do business in the world anymore. And the Montgomery Clift character is a little more, it representing something, it's kind of a new management style in the United States in the 50s, seen through the lens of the Old West?
Sure. I mean, yes. It attaches contemporary issues of economics and world power to the embedded myth of the West so that, you know, it becomes a parable of hard power and soft power.
So as the 1950s unfold, the myth of the West becomes more flexible and adaptable, a way to explain America to itself long after the closing of the frontier. But still, at its core, it's a story of good guys and bad guys, like Rex Allen, the Arizona cowboy in the Overland Trail.
Just take a mile of rolling pasture with the herd standing by.
That's a cowboy's dream of heaven.
Co-starring Coco the Miracle Horse with Slim Pickens and a young Leonard Nimoy before Star Trek, which, if you think about it, Final Frontier and all, is also a Western.
The stars are twinkling, the breeze is whispering low, the boys around the campfire sing a song.
All right, everybody, hold it. Hold it right there.
Hey, it's a fast draw farm boy. What do you want with us, kid?
Looking for a job. High pay, good working conditions, and plenty of chance for advancement.
Did you finish high school?
No.
Well, that's tough. I don't think we have anything for you.
Take your time. You'll think of something.
No. Ain't no room for him, boy.
Now, if he kills you, that'll make room for one. If I kill that little fart right there, that'll make another place.
course, we're always looking for someone who can draw.
I learned to draw at home in my spare time.
Well, here you go, and there you go. You're back, and I'm still here. I'm Billy Flanagan, and today you'll stick with me, and we'll find out how to achieve the kind of thing on canvas that the truly insane seem to come up with little or no effort or thought. There's a color there. I don't know what it is. Doesn't matter what color it is. Haven't you admired those loony eyes on the tramps, you know, or the strange figures in the art of the insane that you find selling for high prices in art centers in the big cities? Well, none of that is as hard as it seems. So today, I'd like you to go along with me today. Try this. Take some of that paint. Let's try another tube here. There we go. There's a big blob of it. I think that's called green, maybe. Not sure. It doesn't matter. It's not as hard as it seems to achieve truly insane effects on canvas without growing through that rigorous training that the insane must go through in those institutions in which they're kept. Now, I'm going to show you today how to do it. You'll be standing on your head. Don't try that. It would be insane. Let's take out our canvas. One of my favorite techniques is to pee all over a fresh canvas before you paint on it. I pre-peed on this because it's TV. I'm not going to do it on TV. It yellows the background and it gives it a smell that'll put you in the mood to recreate some art of the insane. Just using my hairdryer on it here, and you notice when you put the hairdryer on it, the smell really becomes almost unbearable. And it particularly helps when you're painting the eyes to have this wafting up. The smell puts you right there in the attic or the dungeon or wherever you like to imagine the insane artist. He's painting, he's scraping, he's peeing, you get the feeling. There, that's just right. Now let's take some more paint here, thank you. How about this color? Doesn't matter. And I'm using a brush here. You'll notice this brush has a number on it. Doesn't matter what number it is, who cares? As long as there's some number on it, that gets the job done. You wet the brush here and you roll it. There you go. It all looks orange to me. And you just then wipe it on your pants, if you're wearing pants. And if you're not, just squeeze it between your legs, because we're sure to find a clever use for it later. Now, some sky. I like sky because it signals to you and to me we're outdoors, but to the insane artist, it signals something that's above all the insane stuff that we're going to put on with this trowel here and some other color. Let's use this one. Slap it on. We're getting those crazy eyes here, you see. Let's put a hat on that scarecrow. A death's head. I like that. I'll make that a black gardenia, I think. There we go. Pee all over it. We won't do that on TV, but at home, you just feel free to pee right all over it. And before you know it, you've got something that'll look real nice, stacked up with a bunch of pictures of old people at a yard sale or a rummage mall. Well, thanks for being with me. I'm Billy Flanagan. Ooh. Next week on Art of the Insane.
Kind friends, you must pity my horrible tale. I'm an object of pity, I'm looking quite stale. I give up.
Heard this up in Wyoming and Montana, up there on those cow ranges in 1907. Well, after they'd tied up their night horses, the day's work was done. While they'd always build up a campfire and sit around till they'd ready to go to bed. And then they'd always see which was the finest singer and knew the most songs. They call me the orphan of the dreary black hill. Well, some of them couldn't hit any kind of a tune unless they'd pack it over their shoulder in a gunny sack, so they'd just have to kind of say it. And they'd make out how they'd heard others say it in other places. They'd probably hit a little bit of a tune, but it wouldn't be much of one. Railroad speculators, their pockets you'll fill by taking a trip to those dreary black hills.
All I need to have a good time is a reefer, a woman, and a bottle of wine. With those three things, I don't need no sunshine. A reefer, a woman, and a bottle of wine. All I want is to never grow old. I want to wash in a bathtub of gold.
I want 97 kilos already rolled. I want to wash in a bathtub of gold.
What a lovely supper.
The hell we been eating?
Hogbacks and flat beans. You want some more?
I want to light my cigars with $10 bills. I'd like to have a cattle ranch in Beverly Hills. I'd like a bottle of red eye that's always filled. I'd like to have a cattle ranch in Beverly Hills.
These guys sure play better than they rob, don't they?
Well, at least we eat regular. But I'm going to remember this meal for a week.
And the only dudes cast who seemed to understand what Firesign wanted to do with the film were Country Joe and the Fish. When we got to our hotel, Bergman, ever the stoner, asked the bellboy where we might score some pot. And within 20 minutes, some guy showed up with some stuff called alfombro, the carpet. We hoped it would be more pleasant than smoking shag. He then proceeded to tell us tales of the Mexican drug culture, including a story about the head of the local drug trade, known as the Man Who Sees Shadows, so named because people tried to kill him, but only blinded him.
X-3, X-3, five-star, fun, bring your final, feel all about it.
Hey, you don't have to yell, we're standing right here.
How do I know? I'm blind, I can't see you. Oh, may I proceed?
Yeah.
Legendary bad guy Rocky Rococo faces police Tsar Bradshaw in mayoral toss-off. Pledges to track mud across clean city platform. X3.
I could have gotten all that information at firesigntheater.com. Keyword, blind newsboy.
X3, phone rings in distance. It's Nix.
Hey.
You won't find that on the web, smartass.
Oh, yeah. I ought to give
go
you
ahead.
The hot kiss at the end of a wet...
Boy. Put him up. Where'd you go? Where'd you go?
Every night, we'd eat bananas Foster and hoist margaritas. And every morning, we'd pile into a car to visit the film sets. Once, driving endlessly into the desert at dawn on a single road stretching for miles, we came to a crossroad where there had been an accident. Two Mexicans had smashed into each other in the flattest, least populated area in North America because neither would yield to the other. ¿Quién es más macho, indeed? There were endless, exhausting revisions, but the most fun we had was getting Cloris Leachman stoned for the first time when she came to visit. It really blew her mind, because soon after, she divorced George and went on to win an Oscar for The Last Picture Show. I don't recall, however, that she thanked Firesign for the carpet grass in her acceptance speech.
One more mile and we'll score a little grass.
Oh,
one more mile
till this bummer will be over.
Oh, one more mile
and we hope we'll get there fast.
Yeah, oh, one more mile. One more mile. Oh, one.
You don't know Mr. Ed Sullivan, do you? Griswold asked. He lives around here somewheres, don't he?
I haven't had the pleasure, the dean said. He thought for a moment. I know a Booker in Vegas, though. He was one of our people. He was a grad student in comparative religion.
Maybe we can do a deal, the Wrangler said. Which way is New York City?
Well, the dean's wife asked, what were their demands?
I'll tell you in a minute, the dean said. My mule is double parked. The herd turned onto the Cross Bronx Expressway. People looking out of their cars saw thousands and thousands of porcupines. The porcupines looked like badly engineered vacuum cleaner attachments. Vegas, the Wrangler was thinking. 10 weeks at Caesar's Palace at a sock 15 G's a week. The Ballad of the Last Drive. Leroy Griswold singing his smash single, The Ballad of the Last Drive. Get along there, little porcupines! The citizens in their cars looked at the porcupines thinking, what is wonderful? Are these porcupines wonderful? Are they significant? Are they what I need?
What a view. Close your eyes, boy. Now open them.
You see any difference?
No.
Too bad. It's changing. Changing all the time. The mountain keeps a record of it. Page by page. Everything in nature leaves its mark. Look. Seashells at the top of the mountain. And down below, under the sand, new mountains are growing.
Must take a lot of water.
You're beginning to understand. You're slowing down a little.
You know, back where I come from, slowing down can be fatal.
Hurry up and die. Hurry up and die.
Can we just sit here and watch it for a while?
Sure.
Zachariah is now regarded as a gay cult film because the two young male leads, instead of connecting spiritually when they said, "I love you, man," suggested instead an early version of Brokeback Mountain.
You'd shoot me.
That's not what I meant. I love you, Matthew. We said we'd stay together. Let's get out of here.
You and me are not on the same trip. You don't know what you mean.
But I was always taught that laughter makes you fall right over. That's how Hal and I first fell into one another's arms.
Not listening, not listening, not listening, not listening, not listening.
Well, we
I would rather watch Girls Gone Wild.
This.
We need younger heterosexuals on this radio show because some of this stuff is getting pretty
well. I don't
stale.
Know why you don't want to hear about love.
Well, I have every wrong. Respect
all
for the older
need,
homosexuals we
all
have.
All we need yeah. is love. Gesundheit.
You know, really, you belong on German pornographic television.
You're I've been on German pornographic television.
I saw you on German. You know,
I was quite young then, remember, Hal?
Yeah, young.
Oh, I loved the mask.
Want
the silver
to touch
mask.
My monkey?
It drove me mad when you showed me those pictures
monkey
later
masks.
On.
Yes. Mm-hmm.